It's all about an emotion. It's about a personal win. It's about a feeling. Why do you surf? Right?
It's about
because you love balance. It's the feeling. You're on water. You're alive. You feel like you're 19 again, right?
Every way.
Why do you like the Ramones? Right? you think you're back in college, right? Mm. Where you could stay up all night and never have a hangover and you didn't gain weight when you ate pizza.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to give that up. You're chasing the dragon.
Thanks for pressing play. Legends and Losers is sponsored by Oracle NetSuite. Check out netsuite.com/legends to turbocharge your growth today. On this episode, I've been dying to drop this one ever since we shot it. We have the amazing Brian Burns. He is the CEO at b2brevenue.com. And he's one of the podcasters that I love. He's the host of the B2B Revenue Leadership Podcast and probably most famous for the brutal truth about sales and selling. So Brian is Mr. Brutal Truth, but he's a lot of fun. He's the author of 4 books on B2B sales and marketing, and he really is the sales guru in Silicon Valley. And I really enjoy him. I'm a fan of his podcast. He's been kind enough to have me on. I've wanted to have him on Legends and Losers for a long time. We're sort of I'd love for him to become a regular guest. And he's also one of these guys who's a blast to follow on LinkedIn. Check him out on LinkedIn. We have a captivating free-range conversation about sales and a whole lot more.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for people who like to eavesdrop on killer dialogues, brilliant rants, and crazy diversions, straight up with a business twist. Hosted by Christopher Lockhead, former 3-time CMO and co-author of Play Bigger, who has one of the most strategic minds in marketing, but could also hide his own Easter eggs. And now, strap yourselves in. It's time for Legends and Losers.
All right, all right, all right. Hey ho, let's go. Hello, my legendary friends. Welcome to Legends and Losers, where we try to unpack how losing is the pathway to being legendary, and legend and loser are two sides of the same coin. We try to have dialogues that matter, real conversations. This is not some kind of interview show. It's a dialogue show. It's a couple people sitting down having a real conversation, hopefully a conversation that matters and a conversation that you think is worth sharing. And man, do we ever have that this time. He's one of my favorite podcasters. He's a ton of fun. I respect and admire this guy a lot. Here he is, the amazing Brian Burns.
You know, and I had turned down WebLogic on the first round, which, you know, was a $5 million mistake. And if you want to talk about losers.
Yeah, let's talk about some serious losing and losery.
Wow. At the same time, this was 96, 97, I turned down Sisive. Now, Sisive was a local company that was 2 people when I began working with them. They were a partner of mine, and they offered me the VP of sales position, which I passed up and gave to a friend of mine. It was a $30 million mistake.
You like me, Brian, where you have lost more money than you will ever possibly make?
And those from 96 to 99, yeah, I turned down probably $50 million in equity.
Yeah. No, in the dot-com boom, there's no question, and I've done the back of the envelope math, I lost over 100, well, lost, you know, in air quotes, right? Either didn't play what I, you know, play where and when I should have, or didn't sell enough stock, right?
Oh,
I mean, I don't know about you, but I need about 2 minutes with my broker in February of 2000 to change things. But I mean, in terms of monetizable stock, I mean, there's no question in the dot-com era, if you have that of a definition of loss, I lost over $100 million. There's no question about that.
It was just this insane period that I hope we see again.
You know, well, you know, some guys in the blockchain crypto world say we're seeing that now there.
I wish I understood it enough to have an opinion on it.
I understand the blockchain shit more than I understand the crypto shit.
Well, I understand it. I just don't know how is this going to play out. How can you have this coin that fluctuates, you know, 10 or 15% every hour? You know, how do you buy stuff with that? How do you... I mean, it trades like a commodity or an equity or an option. as opposed to a, you know, a currency.
And the thing that gives me pause is, A, there's nothing holding it up, right? So, of course, we used to have the gold standard, and even though we're not on the gold standard anymore, there's all these fail-safes in place that, you know, the government's just not going to let our currency or even our stock market, right? If the stock market goes mental, they shut shit down and they bring out ice for everybody's nuts so everybody can chill out a little, chill their nuts and calm down. And, you know, there are guardrails in place. And look, I'm no expert, but to the best of my knowledge, there are no such guardrails for cryptocurrencies, right?
Not at all. No, no. I mean, all the protections are on the, you know, the uniqueness of it, not the value of it.
Yeah. Now I do the libertarian streak that I have in me, and you know, I don't want to get overly political about stuff, but there's part of me that likes this notion of a currency that the government can't fuck with, or at least fuck with too much. I find that interesting.
That part I do like. But you know, the fluctuation of it, and you know, when my acid test for it is when the bartenders and waitresses start talking about it, you know it's not a good investment.
Right.
Because I remember the housing market when, you know, there was literally this waitress that had bought a house. And I go, can you really afford a house? Yeah, well, the interest rate's so low. And I was like, for how long?
Yeah, and I only put 2% down or whatever.
Yeah, it was like zero down, you know.
Or zero, yeah. Can you still buy a house with zero down? Do you know?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
You know, good luck even when you're self-employed. I can't get a loan. I'm self-employed.
Not even, well, I would have thought just your fame and good looks would have been enough.
No, well, you can get, I mean, even I got 80% equity in my house. And they're like, well, we could do something on a credit card. And I'm like, no, nah, that's not what I'm looking for. You know, I'm looking for something that's tax deductible. And,
wow. And
the world isn't set
that
up.
Tight.
Well, the world isn't set up for entrepreneurs, you know, because I'm sure like me, you run everything as an expense through your business, right?
Yeah, of course. So your whole life is an expense.
Yeah. So, and you probably max out your 401k, self-employed 401k.
Yep.
Right. So you're trying to make your income look as little as possible.
Well, yeah, because, and this is something that people don't particularly understand. You and I live in a state where we get taxed. If it's not 60%, it's damn fuck close.
Yeah.
When you add all of it up.
Yeah.
Right? When your property tax, and then there's always the fucking things they add to your property tax, the school improvement and the this and the that and the, you know. And of course we have what's sales tax? I always forget, is it 8 or 9% in California?
I don't know.
But yeah. You know, it's a meaningful number. And so you add all that shit up, and federal and state, and you know, listen, we work for the government to plus or minus August, certainly into July.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm with you. Who is it who said you have a moral obligation to pay the least amount of tax possible?
I don't know.
Let's just say it was Ben Franklin. So I got to ask you about selling. So I got this yesterday and I almost peed myself. So in selling, one of the things that I learned, you know, Zig Ziglar taught me to sell in my car when I was 18, 19 years old, right? When I started my first business. And then, of course, I took a whole bunch of other sales trainings over time. But one of the things they tell you in sales school is, hey, do your homework, know who your prospect is. And then when you reach out to them, you know, reach out to them in a substantive way and demonstrate that you know who you're reaching out to, right?
Yeah.
Or words to that effect. We still teach people this, yes?
Well, we teach people to pitch and they add a little bit of personalization. And this is what I'm trying to teach people to get away from is that, I mean, do you want to be pitched? I mean, what's the likelihood that I'm going to find something that you need right now? I'm sure you're
maybe
open.
Maybe you, but generic you, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, it might be a new computer. It might be a new microphone. It might be some soundproofing for your studio. It might be, you know, if I could get you 10,000 new listeners in the next month, you might be interested, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if I dug in enough to understand that, then you can pitch.
Yeah.
But if I don't, if I'm just getting you off of a list and I go to your LinkedIn and I talk about, oh, you like the Ramones, that'll get a conversation started, maybe.
Right.
Right.
Well, so here's the pitch I got yesterday. You ready for this?
Hit me. Yeah.
So, you know, I've done a bunch of podcasts, including yours. And again, thank you. I love going on your podcast. I'm a listener. I've been a listener for quite a while. I like your voice. I like your content, too. And I like that you're the brutal truth guy. There's something about your voice and you have an edge. You know, I think George Carlin called it the pussification of America. Like a lot of stuff's getting, you know, pussified. And you're like the opposite of that. And so I love that. Anyway, I digress. This guy sends me an email yesterday. And he says, I heard you on such and such podcast. It wasn't yours. It was another one. And he said, I thought you were really great and you had this great content and so forth and so on. Have you ever thought of starting your own podcast? Because we're a content development company and we'll produce your podcast. And, you know, you should really have your own podcast. Have you ever thought about it? So I literally emailed him back and I said, yeah, we're on episode like 185.
Like,
all you have to do is Google my ass. Like finding out I have a podcast is not like high-end CIA shit.
Right. Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with a salesperson who does that?
It's we've gotten so lazy and the focus is on automation versus really accomplishing anything. And it's KPIs gone mad, you know, and I think it started about 10 years ago with when people started to adopt a CRM and actually use it. Before then, people had it and no one paid attention to it and everybody was okay with it. You know, we bought it, check. Do we use it? Well, get to that. But
so
now,
you think salespeople even today are still not really using their CRM?
Well, they use it to the extent that their manager wants it used, wants to see it in their dashboard. And it's actually the problem with sales today is everyone's doing what the dashboard wants to be viewed as opposed to what really accomplishes anything. You know, I did a video on, is the problem pipeline or is the solution pipeline? Because everybody thinks, oh, you got to have three times your pipeline for your quota. So what does everybody do? They put three times in the Salesforce, right? But now you have to manage that. You have to call those people. You have to correct it. You have to update it. When it falls apart, you have to justify it. So you're spending 2/3 of your time on deals that won't close.
Hmm. And so how do I think about, on one hand, you know, I want a big fat pipe, but at the same time, you know, that old expression, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to really take a look. And I've always kind of prioritized things based off of chronological order of closure as opposed to likelihood of closure.
Right.
Because that way, that's what you work on. The most important thing first, then the next, then the next, then the next. And you won't get to the lowest priority.
Interesting.
What does everybody do? You look at your CRM and it's just this bucket of, you know, characters. There's no real structure to it. There's no prioritization of it. And all managers care about is what the pie chart looks like. Who's green, yellow, and red. And they get really concerned on the yellow and red and they don't focus on the green until the end of the quarter. And managers have started to focus on the pie charts more than the people. And they don't want to focus on the people because they view the people as temporary, whether they're going to make it or not. And if you listen to managers on podcasts, they don't talk about people as people. They talk about, you know, with a title, these kids. It's this layer of abstraction that they've really, and it's like marketing talking about persona. You know, and that's another
cool word for that now is, what's your avatar, man?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Joey. And you're like, well, the problem with that is it's still a person, right?
Yeah.
And that,
remember, I don't know, we used to have words like, who's our ideal customer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And today I think we're missing the point completely. You know, we're just really, both on the marketing and on the sales side. Because, I mean, today on the marketing side, you know who your ideal customer profile is. You know who's in market. You know who's looking at what. You can find out, you know, everything you want to and prioritize them and predict who's most likely to be coming to your website or who should. You can advertise to them. You can reach out to them. And so the days of having to surface them through content or lead magnets, that's disappeared.
Because it's easier to target them.
It's easier that you now know. Before,
you now know who they are.
Yeah, we had no databases, but now we know every company in the world. We pretty much know every person in the world. And you start to see them on the review sites. You know, the people are now selling their identity through every content, every magazine, everything they touch, every social network. And, you know, Google, you know, keeps track of you, you know, if you haven't noticed.
It's spooky and weird. It's like, I don't know. I read 1984 as a kid. I remember that shit. And it just gets truer and truer. You know, we had Ray Wong on recently. He's a reoccurring guest, and I just love him. He's just so smart. And, you know, we talked a lot about, like, Alexa. It's like there's a thing in your house that listens to every fucking thing you say.
Yeah.
Like, that freaks me out. I don't have one of these things. And, look, I get the utility. It'd be really awesome to say, Alexa, play the Ramones. I would love to do that, right? And, you know, and as a kid who grew up on Star Trek, you know, Scotty, computer, right? And then the computer talks back. It's very fucking cool, but it's a thing in your house from some company that listens to every fucking thing you say.
Right. Yeah. And the new Macs, Siri's going to be on by default.
So yeah. No, I turn that shit off.
Yeah. I mean.
And I also, do you do this? I put a piece of tape on the camera on my laptop.
Yeah, I haven't done that. I should. You know, I haven't seen the Snowden movie. And, you know, that was a community I sold into forever. And, yeah, you're doing it.
Yeah, I forgot I had moved it over because before our discussion today, I was on my laptop, actually on a Zoom, just talking to a buddy of mine while I was on my a ski machine. And so, yeah, I realized I hadn't moved my tape back.
So it's... And that's it. So there's so much data. It's like, why aren't marketers using that? I think they're really kind of stuck in the implementing marketing automation, the spam automation. I think that's, you know, I don't know how much engagement you still have with CMOs and stuff.
You know, I'm getting more and more. I made this decision, you know, so roughly 2 years ago when my first book, Play Bigger, came out, I retired from Play Bigger, the company that I had co-founded with my co-authors. And I said to myself, I'm retired, and I took 6 months off and all this. And then started Legends and Losers, and I've been slowly on this path to not being retired ever since. And I had this aha a few months back, which is I was educated by a bunch of super smart guys that essentially this is the greatest time in history to be alive, and it's the greatest time in history to be an entrepreneur and be in business because of all the cool new shit. And if you list all the cool new shit, it's actually a very long list of cool new shit. And I thought to myself, self, like, all this cool shit's going on. It's the greatest time in history. And, like, you know, all you're doing is sitting in the garden, hanging out with chickens and surfing and shit, like, and doing the podcast and stuff. But, like, anyway, long story longer, Brian, I'm doing a little bit more now. So to answer your question, yes, I get to hang out with entrepreneurs and CEOs and CMOs because I'm a little more engaged now than I was, you know, probably the first time you had me on your podcast.
Well, that's it, because this is the new medium, because it's passive, meaning that you don't have to be sitting at the desk watching it, reading it, giving it 100% of your attention. And let's face it, blogs, how many blogs do you really read? You know, they're getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah. I mean, I'll read a post that's really good, right? So, like, I have these buddies.
There's some.
Ian is a co-founder of this outfit called The Mission, and they do some great stuff. They've been kind enough to, you know, publish some of my stuff with Heather and others. And, you know, so I like some of their stuff, and there's a handful of others. But, yeah, you're right. It's like, let me say it this way. There's no blog I'm addicted to the way I'm addicted to some of my favorite podcasts.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, I've gone through two sets of ear pods, you know, since they came out, 7 months ago?
Yeah. I wanted to ask you. I love your videos where you're just like walking down the street. I don't know if it's at the end of your morning run or what you're doing, but like you're this, you're like Brogan, you're Chris Brogan. You know, you do this video blogging where you just like bullshit for a few minutes into the iPhone about something that's on your mind. And I like that you do that because your bullshit's very good bullshit.
Right. I get up, I got a little 3x5 card and I'm like, okay. And I'll try and find like the most passionate things I care about that people are getting wrong that I see on LinkedIn and stuff. And I'll just put it there. And I've got this little $20 selfie stick with a Bluetooth remote. And I just hold it out there. And some of them, I've gotten 50,000 views on them. It's insane.
Incredible. Yeah. Did you ever worry, like you're walking down the street in your neighborhood and somebody sees you doing this, that they think you're like an insane person?
Yeah, they do. You know, it's a pretty nice neighborhood. So it's not that. And one day there was a deer. So I caught the deer on camera. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, but I you know, there's a lot of that stuff that is sort of, to me, the equivalent of, you know, Kardashian ass selfies. It's just stupidity and, you know, it's look at me bullshit. But your little snippets are, you always have something interesting to say. I normally catch them on LinkedIn.
That's it. I try and keep it under 2 minutes. I have a point to it, a little bit of humor, a little bit of counterintuitive. It's not just, you know, ask questions or listen better, or it's really like what I see people doing wrong.
Yeah.
And the walking seems to give people a more of an engagement, like they're going on a journey.
Yeah.
And I did one where I turned around and then turned around again. It was part of the story and people really liked it.
I love it. So what are people getting wrong? We started talking about sort of the over use of technology and the overthinking about red, yellow, and green and that stuff. What are some other things in sales, Brian, that people are getting wrong these days?
Well, we kind of went through this second wave of sales automation. We went through the CRM, and then we went through kind of the cadence automation. And I think that's coming to an end right now because people are just getting sick of getting stuck in someone's cadence. And, you know,
drip, 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 where we're always banging people.
You get the email, phone call, social touch. And if you've ever been in it, if you ever touched a website and converted with your email, and then all of a sudden your phone starts ringing, you get a LinkedIn connection, you get one email, another email, and they have like 16 touches in 16 days. And I'm like, that's not selling. That's stalking.
And exactly. I'm going to get a restraining order on your ass.
and people see that as a badge of honor instead of stupidity. And not only is it wrong, you can see what's happening in Europe with GDPR. That did not come about because people were behaving. That came about because people are sick of this.
That's because marketing and salespeople were stupid, right?
There's
no other interpretation of that law than that, right?
Yeah, because we all want to know about new things. We all are open to engagement, some more than others. And we all have a network of friends and coworkers and past coworkers. So we're all accessible, but we don't want to be pitched.
I can't stand is the disingenuous one. Like I got one recently where this guy friends me on LinkedIn. Fine, I don't give a shit who you are. I'll friend you on LinkedIn. I don't care. And then he sends me a note and he says, hey, you know, thanks for accepting my friend request or whatever it's called on LinkedIn. And, you know, it's one thing to be connected on LinkedIn, but I'd really like to get to know you. Why don't we set up a, you know, get to know you call? And then he sends me this video of himself.
Yeah.
And I'm an introverted extrovert. And so like the worst thing, he didn't use this term, but I hear this a lot too. I want to get your feedback on all of this, Brian. This term, like, I want to network with you. I don't want to network with you. If there's a reason, and I know exactly what this fucking guy wanted. He wanted to get on the podcast. That's what he wanted. But instead he wants to do this thing and let's start off. We'll have a cocktail and then a nut tickle. And then sooner or later you'll sort of like me. And then I earn the right to ask to come on the podcast. why do we mamby-pamby around? Why don't you send me a LinkedIn request and say, hey, love your show, love to be on your podcast, here's why I think I'd be a good guest. But no, he wants to mamby-pamby and nut tickle and network and all this bullshit. Is that where we've gotten, that people believe you sort of have to have this disingenuous, I want to be your friend thing going on?
I think people are doing that. I don't think it's very effective because, you know, you don't want to network, but you're open to hearing feedback about your podcast. You care about your podcast. It's your passion now. You want great guests.
Of course.
And if this person, is a great guest, they should say, hey, I was on this podcast, that podcast. I can talk to these things that I think your audience would be interested in. How can I help you? I just posted a review of your podcast. Here's an image of it. There you go. Right?
Right. Now we're talking. At least we're fucking trying and we're being direct. That's the other thing. Like, I'm a fan of Kim Scott's book, Radical Candor. Be fucking, just tell me.
Tell you and show that you're a giving human being who understands how the game is played.
Yeah.
Because how many guests do you have that don't like, comment, or share the content that they contributed to?
A lot.
99?
Yeah, and look, I get it. People are busy and all that. And look, I want you to be a guest, that you don't necessarily have to do all those things. But, of course, as a podcaster, if you leave a review or you fucking at least retweet the fucker when it comes out once.
Yes, you're called out, you see it.
Give me a something. Throw me a little Scooby snack, right?
I get texts from people saying, hey, I really liked your post. And I go, the way to like my post is with that little thumbs up next to the post, not to text me.
Yeah. Or fuck, even better, share it.
Yeah. And I've had to ask people three times. They'll send me like three different texts. That was hilarious. Thanks for sharing that.
Hey, well, the way to thank an iTunes review. Yeah.
That's why they put that little icon there. And people are like, oh, wow, that seems like so much work. As opposed to typing this thing to me?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think people have forgotten, you know, these simple little human interactions.
Yeah.
You know?
It's weird. It does seem like, I don't know, maybe the technology is making us more transactional. I don't know. What do you think's going on about that?
I think it's the technology. I think it's the culture. I think it's a lot of things that are going on that are going backwards. The technology certainly allows us to be anonymous, which allows us to say whatever we want with no repercussions. I don't know. I post a lot on LinkedIn and people always have this emotional reaction that has nothing to do with my content sometimes.
Isn't that weird? When somebody starts like ranting about, like, I don't know.
Oh, they say this
random thing going on in South America or something.
Well, I had this roller coaster video that was clearly staged where the guy pretends to be super scared and the woman's having the time of her life. And he's like, I want to break up. I want to break up. And she's kind of like, what? And she's like enjoying it. And this guy from Germany says he's having an anxiety attack. And I'm like, when you were on a roller coaster, did you know what a roller coaster is? You know what it does? And did it have a camera in front of you when you went on it? It's staged. You're insensitive. Posting this is encouraging people to do stupid things. And I'm like, delete, blocked. It's just,
how stupid can you be?
Yeah. And I put a movie clip of Private Ryan. And there was no violence, no swears, nothing. And I said, this is what it feels like right before a forecast review, you know, because all the soldiers are scared and nervous and stuff. And they're like, oh, I'm offended by that. And I'm like, and he calls out his religion. And I go, do you realize Steven Spielberg?
Yeah.
Wasn't offended by making this movie and won an Academy Award for it.
He was a and Jewish Tom Hanks guy talking about the Second World War. Like, do you have any idea what you're saying, you dumbass?
It's a 1 minute clip that has nobody being hurt. You know, and you're like, oh.
I don't know if you find this. I sort of had this aha a few years ago, Brian, which was, I don't want to be around anybody who hasn't gotten over themselves.
I think today we're overwhelmed with people who feel obligated to not be over themselves, to find whatever thing they can possibly be offended by. I don't know if you've seen Who Is America?
No. What is that?
Sacha Baron Cohen's new series on Showtime.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. Is it?
Is it insanely funny. Insanely funny. He goes, I respect all 24 genders.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's fantastic. I love Borat. Borat was, I peed myself through the whole movie. But I will always, of his characters, and maybe this one will, change my opinion, but I loved Ali G. Oh my God!
Well, this makes Ali G. It's 2018 Ali G.
It's great! Goodness. What's it called?
He played Who Is America?
Oh, that's great!
You will laugh through it. He has this one character who plays an NPR guy who's riding through America trying to heal the divide.
Oh my God! I remember there was an episode of Ali G with Pat Buchanan on it. Did you ever see this one?
I'm trying to remember it. Yeah.
And so he's asking him about the war in Iraq, and he said, I can't do the accent or any of that, but he asks Pat Buchanan. He says, "So, did you really think that Saddam had the BLTs?" And he says BLTs like 10 yeah. times or something. And he says it so many times that Buchanan's like, ah, fuck. You can sort of see him in his head say, ah, fuck it. I'm not even going to bother with this guy. And so finally Buchanan turns to him and he says, yeah, we really thought Saddam had the BLTs. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. It is just hilarious.
So, yeah, I love him. I'll have to check that out. Who is America? So what else is going on in your world that's fun right now, Brian?
I'm having a lot of fun with the podcast. I think it is the way to build an audience. And I think that audience is so valuable because there is no other way that you can grow it, not only on the sales side, but I think on the marketing and the leadership side as well, because you're in people's ears. And if you have both education and entertainment, some mix of that that's just right, I think people are really gravitating towards it and getting value out of it. And there is nothing else like it. Webinars, forget about it. YouTube, when something's broken, you go to YouTube to check it out.
How to repair this chair, right?
Right. And blogs. I think people look at blogs, listicles, they get interested, it's clickbait, but no one's going to buy anything because they're listening to it or reading a blog. And trade shows, I forget about it. I think,
conferences.
The money, right. I think small get-togethers are doing well.
Yeah.
That are focused on particular problems that I'm hearing is working really well. But as far as, these dream forces or SASTers, people are finding that it's insanely expensive. And all those people who are talking are on podcasts the whole year long.
Well, yeah. And they have TED Talks or.
Yeah.
So I did one recently. I'll sort of give a bit of a shout out or a plug to these guys. They're in the Salesforce ecosystem. The company's called Traction On Demand. They're a good Canadian company up in Vancouver, or as we say, Vancouver. And they invited me to come and participate in their event this year with, they had about 1,000 people, a very cool event. And what they decided to do was they sort of said, for the most part, we're going to fuck the traditional keynote, panel, break, keynote, et cetera, just the talking at you. And they said, what we want to have is actually kind of a conference that's a conversation. And can we sort of, this is probably too strong of a word, but, model it a little bit off of Legends and Losers. And so they wanted me to come and host the event and have a series of dialogues on main stage. And they recreated the set, the Legends and, the Legends and Losers studio on stage and stuff. And anyway, it was And their mantra was kind of like a conversation, not a conference.
Yeah.
And then they had like this bar, and then it would sort of spill out into the bar so the conversation would continue. I thought that was a very cool idea as opposed to the traditional, you know, wah, 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 wah.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you see it today, I mean, how many times do you have to hear Seth Godin talk about, you know, cat food, if cats made cat food, it'd be mouse flavored. Okay. Thanks, Seth. Heard that 10 years ago. It's on, you know, 100 YouTube channels. It's, you know, or Gary Vaynerchuk talking about hustling and social media. I mean, do we really need to hear that again?
I can't stand that guy. I think he's
thank you. I finally met somebody.
No, look, he can go fuck himself. He is a business Kardashian. Like, he doesn't, all he said, first of all, he's got two pieces of advice. Hustle and follow your passion. Both of them are moronic, right?
Yes.
And then the rest of it is just a bunch of look at me. I'm going to tickle my nuts in front of you, and don't you wish you were me? I can't believe that people consume this crap.
Well, I think the, you know, the early 20s people love, they buy into the hustle thing because it makes sense. But the problem with it is there's a lot of people at Walmart and Starbucks hustling, and they're going to go nowhere. So it's about doing something smart in a smart industry in a smart way.
Well, and, you know, my big argument, of course, with that is if you're hustling in a category that's dominated by somebody else, you're fucked from the beginning, right? You've got to niche down. You've got to make your own place and then hustle at something, a game that you created that you can win, as opposed to hustle in somebody else's game. You're never going to get anywhere.
Right. You know, I mean we
like,
see
what? It's so... it's like candy at best. And what these guys are selling is, don't you want to be like me?
Right. And I look at it as stupid. I look at the guy getting up at 4 a.m. to go give the same speech he's given 100 times before that sounds identical. And I'm like, I can't tell you how little I'd like to get up at 4 a.m. to go to an airport, you know, to stand in a security line when I can go around and walk and do my selfies. You know,
well, yeah. And didn't we talked about this? I think when I was on your show, you've pretty much given up travel and sort of traditional keynote speaking. Have you not?
Completely. Yeah. So that was just an insane waste of time, you know, being on a plane. And I had the same thing would happen every time I'd land at SFO. My phone would connect to the network and I'd have 3 messages that were all about me being on the East Coast the next week. I'd land in Boston the next week, and I'd land and I have 3 messages saying you have to be an SFO the next week. And I'd be like, and I'm 6'4", and I'm mostly legs. So, you know, an airline seat is, you know, somewhat medieval torture.
First class anymore.
And you can't get in there without, you know, a 3 months advance notice or $5,000, whichever comes easier. And neither.
I know this makes me sound like a douchebag, but unless it's Southwest and it's a short flight, but for the most part, if I'm flying across the country or whatever, I can't fly in the back of the bus anymore.
Oh, my level of patience with it is, because I did it for my whole career. I flew,
right,
you know, 3 days a week. You know, so I did the Tuesday morning up at 4, you know, to land in Atlanta at 10:30 to be at a 11 o'clock meeting, have 3 meetings, a dinner meeting, and then, you know, do that 3 days in a row, then fly back on a Thursday night. And that wears on you.
It wears on you, man. It really, yeah. We recently had my buddy Jay Larson on. He's the CEO of Optimizely. Actually, he'd probably be a great guest for you because.
Yeah, I was just listening to it this morning.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. If you want an intro, let me know. You know, he's the classic sales success story. Literally starts off as a rep and is now a 2-time CEO, and he's killing it at a great company. And I think he's an awesome guy. But we were talking about, you know, same thing. I mean, he traveled like a maniac for the better part of a decade, and he was talking about the impact on his family.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was not only the family, but the health. Your quality of life.
You end up eating like shit too, don't you?
Oh, God. Yeah. I had a guy on my podcast who traveled the country to visit every one of his customers, every substantial customer. He drove all around the country. And I go, oh, how did you eat? And he goes, it was a real challenge, man. I had to, you know, plan ahead to find a fresh Whole Foods. And, you know, I had to like find a way of exercising because you're just sitting in a car all day.
Well, and there was a point in time where people were like, oh, I know the answer to this is Chipotle. Yeah, well, I turn on the news every other day and people are dying of food poisoning from Chipotle. So they were supposed to be like the healthy fast food company. And now they're, you know, making everybody sick.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a CEO, but as a rep by, you know, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, what do you feel like doing? You want to sit at that bar, you know, and have a beer and a burger. You don't want to have a lettuce and a water.
No.
You know, you want to decompress.
God bless kale. But like, I don't like this. Who really likes kale?
Oh, you know, and 8 years ago, I got into juicing. So, I mean, it took me a long time to be able to stomach it. And it has a super positive effect on your life. But yes, it does not taste like a French fry. And
No, I like a nice IPA and a really good bacon cheeseburger with avocado.
Yeah, well, that's it. And all of a sudden, after 3 nights of having martinis and burgers or steaks, you're like, you start to feel it, right? The belt. Hey, did I bring the wrong size belt?
So funny. You know, the comedian Ron White.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was just talking about him with my two co-producers, Jamie J and Sarah Parrish, because they went to see him recently. And I saw him several years ago, and he's one of my favorite comedians. And he's got a joke about this. He says, you know, you're getting fatter and fatter. And he's like, you know, you ever taken a shit so big your pants fit better? He says, I think I'm one big dump away from a new wardrobe. You know, when you start feeling that way, you've been traveling like crazy and your pants are getting a little tight and it's like, oh fuck.
Well, that's it. I remember, I can't tell you the number of times I'd come home and I'd sit in my chair in my living room. I'd turn the TV on and, you know, it's the first time you're in a room that's not a hotel room where you just relax. And you're just watching what you want to watch on a real TV and not one of those hotel TVs. And you don't have to figure out the remote. And you know you're going into your bed that night and you don't have to go anywhere in the morning and nobody's calling.
And you got a DVR. Like the weirdest thing to me today about being in a hotel room is there's no DVR. So you turn on the news or whatever it is. And like, I don't know about you, but I never watch commercials, right?
Yeah, I hate them. Yeah.
And it's weird to have to sit through commercials.
It's terrible.
Well, and the other thing, too, about, you know, even if you're in a super ding-dong hotel, like, you know, people do weird shit in hotel rooms. There's been some weird shit that's gone down in this hotel room.
Well, and continues to go on around you. And I don't know about you. I'm a morning guy, so I'm up super early, crazy early. And you know, but when you start hearing noises at like 2 a.m, drunk people in the hallway, you know, people coming to the wrong room. And you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's like try to get a good night's sleep at a hotel in Vegas, right? It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, the walls are paper thin. The rooms are tiny, you know, especially like city hotels. They're just brutal.
Yeah, the Courtyard Marriott, the walls aren't that thick.
Yeah.
The old Courtyard.
You know, my life became like, you know, Up in the Air, that George Clooney movie.
Yeah.
Remember that? I mean, I literally could eyeball a security line and I could tell you how long, you know, who to look for, the kids, the elderly, you know, anybody who's not paying attention, holding a cup of Starbucks or something, thinking the first time through.
Yeah, and your life is some weird combo of that movie and Trains, Planes, and Automobiles and Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
Yeah, that, you know, especially as a rep where you're like, all of a sudden you're getting a call from your manager and stuff and they're beating you up while you're trying to, you know, get through a security line and stuff. It's just, it's not a fun way to live, you know.
Hey, but you got to get out there, Brian, and hustle, hustle, hustle.
Well, that's it. I see like him do it. Even like Casey Neistat, who, you know, I admire. And, you know, he always flies first class and stuff. And he loves to travel. And he's not a tall guy. But, you know, and he complains about being away from his family and stuff. And it's like, come on. If you didn't want to be away from your family, don't fly to Dubai, you know, to give a talk.
It's funny. I got probably about a year ago an invitation to go speak in Dubai. And And so I sent him a note back and I said, yeah, I will do that for $95,000 plus first class travel.
It just
they didn't take me up on the offer.
No.
Because you think about it, you can fly to a place like Dubai. There's no way around it. That's a week out of your life.
Yeah, and it's not like Australia where there's like people speak the language or there's the beach, you know, there's big buildings and inside shopping and things I'm sure you're not like dying
not
to do.
I'm not a big guy on inside shopping.
No.
Although I now have one buddy there. Dr. James Kelly is there. He's a great guy. You should probably have him on your podcast as well. He's written a great, he's a marketing PhD. Think about that.
Yeah.
There's me. I got thrown out of school at 18. And then there's Dr. Kelly. Anyway, he's written this great book called The Crucible's Gift. And he's an American guy. I forget now where he grew up. But anyway, he wanted to give his children an international experience. And so he's lived different places. And he's been living in Dubai for a little while now. So I guess I could go visit Dr. James. But, you know, this is the other thing. I don't know if you feel this way. You know, I moved to the Bay Area, now Santa Cruz. And I love it here, particularly Santa Cruz. I have learned that where you live matters more than I could ever have imagined.
Yeah.
And having traveled a lot and, you know, having had that experience of feeling like a citizen of the world, that was cool. But now I've really found my place. I love it here. I'm very happy here. I have great friends here. I'm close to Silicon Valley, all that. I can go to Tahoe. You know, there's sort of, if you sort of, for me, you take a pin and put it on Santa Cruz and say a 4 to 6 hour drive and I'm good pretty much for the rest of my life.
It's a beautiful area. Yeah. I've got to find that place. Fortunately or unfortunately, I own a place that's, you know, 3 blocks from where Marriott's building their worldwide headquarters, but that's going to take 3 years to finish. And I think the property value is going to go up, but I do want to move to some place that where the quality of life is a lot better.
So what are you thinking about?
I like Massachusetts, kind of on the Cape Cod, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard area.
Yeah.
Or maybe down in Florida. You know, because I still need to be high speed internet. So like Hawaii is not really on the list. And you still got to pretend that you work hard. And
I love Hawaii and I have dear friends there. I have god children there. And so I go there fairly regularly, and how can you not love it?
It's beautiful.
And I remember as a kid growing up in Montreal, Canada, Brian, I thought, you know, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would be the greatest place? And I always thought, well, it must be Hawaii. I don't want to live in Hawaii.
No.
It's hot.
Oh, it can be hot. I like summer, and Kauai's my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, every time I've been there, I've had a ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love, you know, there's just that, you know, waking up there. And I actually had a business trip in Maui and I'd sit in the lobby of the airport and just work. Not the airport, but the Marriott. And, you know, you'd hear the birds as the sun came up. And it was just like such a better way to live. There was no traffic.
Yeah.
You know, no honking the horn or anything.
Yeah, we don't have any. There's no honking allowed in Santa Cruz, pretty much. The other thing is we live close to the beach.
And yeah.
So we can hear it all the time, and we can smell it all the time.
Like
ocean air that is just full of that salt water. Like you open the door, we sleep with the window open, and like that shit, being right next to the ocean is really a powerful thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a hypnotic thing. And let's face it, we must have been conditioned over centuries of wanting to be near water and hear water.
I got a funny story for you about that. So living where I live, you know, the wackadoo never takes a day off here. Like
it is a magnet for that, though.
Right? I mean, you know, you've been around here. I mean, there's a lot of wackadoo here. And so one day I get out of the water surfing, and this guy who's, you know, sort of a local surfer, a guy who's in the water kind of every day, and he's a character, a very friendly character, and his name, he's not with us anymore, but his name is Marty. And so he comes up to me, and he says, you know, Chris, he says, you're a great swimmer. And I said, oh, yeah, thanks, Marty. You know, I've been working on my paddling and stuff. And he goes, because just for you to be here, you had to outswim tens of thousands other swimmers, right? And he starts to go to like...
You know where it's going.
Yeah, like he's like, and the reason you love to surf so much is you're just going back to your nature as a swimmer because you...
That's a little stretch.
Yeah, well, and you know, Santa Cruz is the kind of place where you could be pumping gas and, you know, some guy will come up to you and say, you know, it's all a conspiracy. And I go, yeah.
Oh,
I know.
Boy.
And like, and who knows what they're talking about? You know, it could be the what do they call them? The airline chemtrails. That's what they call them.
Oh, chemtrails. Yeah.
You know those people, the chemtrails people?
Yeah, the flat earth people.
Yeah, I love all those. We got a ton of those conspiracy guys around here.
That's a little too much, the Alex Jones folks.
Oh, no, I like, you know, the political ones are a little heavy for me.
Yeah.
The sort of older ones, like, you know, maybe the who shot JFK ones, maybe with some distance they get a little funnier. But I like, you know, so in Felton we have the Bigfoot Museum. And, like, whenever I'm around there, if I have some time, I'll, like, roll on in there. And the guy that owns and runs the Bigfoot Museum is, like, right out of Central Casting.
Well, he'd have to be, wouldn't he?
You know, he looks exactly like, if I say to you, hey, guy who runs Bigfoot Museum in Felton, you know exactly what this guy looks like and exactly what he's like. He's like perfectly cast. And I go in there and I make a, you know, $20 donation and I listen to 15 minutes of really good Bigfoot bullshit. So I like those kinds of conspiracies, like why the government won't tell us the truth about Bigfoot. I got time for that.
You do. That's
all right. Well, anything else you want to touch on, Ryan?
Bigfoot? No.
I did want to ask you from a startup perspective. You know, I get asked this question a lot. How should, if I'm a startup founder, and maybe we've got a friends and family round or a Series A round, but we're still in the very beginning stages. When should I hire my first salespeople and my sales leadership? How should I think about that?
You know, I've worked with a lot of people at that stage. I mean, I think you first have to figure out how to sell it yourself. You know, and I'm sure you've probably done this trying to sell either sponsorships or partnerships until you understand the issues. It's going to be hard to teach somebody else that.
And have you run into technical founders, you know, engineering type founders who are under this false idea that, well, you know, even if we haven't sold anything yet, we'll just hire like an awesome startup salesperson and that person will figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, there are people out there. They're hard to find, but it's, you want to do it for yourself as well. So you understand the issues. Otherwise you're going to think it's the person if they don't sell and you're not going to believe them because you've never met the customer. I think most of the people that I've seen successful have figured out how to get at least the first two or three clients. And then they hire somebody to either help get meetings for them or somebody who's adjacent to the space or somebody within their network where they already have that. I know this person can sell. So if they don't work out, it's got to be something else.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw this.
Go ahead.
I'm sure you've seen this in marketing all the time because marketing doesn't really have as tight of evidence, you know, because otherwise you're kind of, you know, trying to jimmy the system, trying to say, okay, here's the number of people who convert it and stuff. And then sales says, well, they're not qualified. And sales, if they've got the revenue, you know, they can sell. If they don't have the revenue, maybe they can't sell, or maybe there might be something else.
Maybe you and I should collaborate on, speaking of not doing reading blogs, but I have told marketing people for years that the number one skill to being a great marketer is to learn how to sell. You know, even as a CMO, my objective was to be the most requested person in the company on a sales call.
Yeah.
Because I knew that if I was on calls, if I was, you know, an executive sponsor of a deal and I built a relationship with, you know, whoever the economic buyer was on the other side, that there was something, and, you know, Jay and I were talking about this because at Mercury we had a huge culture of executives in the field, engineering executives, finance, of course, myself. And I think if you're not, if you're a leader in a company of any kind, founder or not, and you're not able to sell, I what you said, I think is so big, so important, so not talked about. You're at a massive disadvantage.
Yeah. I mean, because remember how much you learned when you did that, because you're asking questions like, what do you read? What influences you? Who do you follow? Who do you think, whose opinion do you care about? What podcasts do you listen to? You know, what websites do you go to? Do you read a blog? Where do you get your information? What conferences matter to you? What's bullshit and what's good? As a marketer, you want to know that stuff.
Yeah.
And too many people are just doing the checklist thing. You know, okay, do we have an ebook? Okay, do we have a form for the ebook? Do we promote the ebook? You know, do we have a webinar every month, quarter, or year, whatever it is? Are we going to the four big shows? And boom, boom, check, check, check. Look, I did it, you know, but that doesn't solve the real problem.
You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a very big ding-dong public company CEO. And he was sharing with me, you know, under Friend DA, that they had just closed a $20 million deal with one of the biggest name brand companies you can think of. And so we were talking about it. I was congratulating him. It was obviously $20 million. You know, they're a big company, but that's still a very meaningful transaction for them. And so I said to him, you know, let's just call him Jimmy. I said, you know, Jimmy, do you know why ABC Corporation gave you the $20 million? Like, what is it? Because you sold them some bits, right? You sold them a PowerPoint presentation, right? Like, I think it's an incredible thing when you can, like, hey, some slides and then a $20 million money. Purchase order from, like, a legit Fortune 500 company that we all know, right? And so it's a fascinating conversation, whether you're a startup closing your first two or three sales or, you know, in this case, a public company CMO driving these big deals. What is it you get underneath? Like, what is it that causes people to go from a PowerPoint to a transaction? That's an important thing to know.
Very important, especially for the salesperson who's getting comped on that deal, because it's not what's on the PowerPoint. It's almost always someone's personal win, where this purchase is going to drive their career. It's going to enable them to get promoted. It's, you know, when people think, oh, it's reduced costs or increased revenue. No, it's all about getting promoted, getting income, personal wins.
You know, it's funny you say that, because as a, you know, you're a much more of a B2B guy, as am I, of course. You know, I've done some things in consumer, but much more B2B. There's this sort of thing that takes over. It's like, oh, yes, well, because you're selling B2B, you know, it's all about the ROI. It's all about the business case. It's, you know, let's get the spreadsheets going. And I'm not saying you don't have to do that stuff. You do. But we all know the truth, right? What's the brutal truth, Mr. Brutal Truth?
It's all about an emotion. It's about a personal win. It's about a feeling. Why do you surf, right?
It's about,
because you love balance. It's the feeling. You're on water. You're alive. You feel like you're 19 again, right?
Every way.
Why do you like the Ramones, right?
you
think you're back in college, right? Mm-hmm. Where you could stay up all night and never have a hangover, and you didn't gain weight when you ate pizza,
yeah,
right? You don't want to give that up. You're chasing the dragon, right? It's like,
and people forget, like, these giant $20 million deals, the guy or gal who signed off on that, it's a personal win. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. It's and the spreadsheets and the ROIs and all that shit is just to validate, this makes me feel good.
Yes.
But we forget that, right? We think it's about the
spreadsheet. Nobody drives a convertible because it makes sense, right?
No.
It makes no sense to drive a convertible. It rains.
Yeah, and I drive a 662 horsepower Shelby Cobra Mustang. There's nothing about that that makes sense other than I feel like a kid in a giant Hot Wheel.
Yeah, and people forget this. Advertisers forget it. Everyone's trying to appeal to logic, insight. You know, everyone's trying to bring insight today, and it's like, well, insight is a logic fart. How do you know that they don't know what you're talking about? How do you bring something that they don't know if you don't know them?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, people selling books and training. It's like, you've got to get into what does that person care about? What excites them? And how do you bond with them and pull out what this is going to mean to them? I had clients who sold private jets, and they were trying to sell on safety and independence. I go, no, you sell to their ego. You take pictures of them getting on that jet. You take pictures of them drinking. You take them to a place to have dinner that's a city away. You take them on a golf outing. They sold more jets than they could make.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? Because they're all putting that on Facebook and Instagram. You justify it by security. You justify it by time.
Yes. We just shot an episode of Legends and Losers with this guy, Alex Holt. Do you know him? The restaurateur, the hockey player turned restaurateur. He had a place in Los Gatos called Holt's that was a more high-end place. And he's now struck gold with this. He niched down, literally, and he created this restaurant called Flights, where everything's a tapa and everything's a flight. So when you buy a margarita there, you don't get one. You get three small margaritas.
Yeah.
And then they do pairings and all this shit. And so everything's a flight, and it's a great concept. And he did it around comfort food. So it's not like – but he said something really interesting. He said the presentation matters as much as the food, because when we deliver you a flight of margaritas or burgers or whatever the fuck it is, right – the first thing we want you to do is go, this is awesome, and I need to put it on Instagram.
Yes.
He's building his business because the food and the drinks look awesome, purpose built for social media.
Yes.
How fucking smart is that?
Yeah. And in the D.C. area, there's the best restaurant in D.C. is an hour west of D.C. in a town called Little Washington. And it's owned by this guy. It used to be a garage, a mechanics garage. And it's like the French Laundry is to the Valley, is to D.C. And they call it theater.
They call it what?
He calls it dinner is theater. And this guy, Patrick O'Connell, you can Google him. And he's one of the top 50 chefs in the world. And he's self-taught. And to go there, it's theater. It's like you were in Europe. You sit down and everything is timed perfectly and the plates are gorgeous and everything. And that's what people want. They want an experience. This is the experience generation. Everybody's talking about that. But what is an experience? An experience is a feeling.
Right. It's a set of things that happen that create a feeling that sticks with you, right?
Yeah.
And wasn't it Zig Ziglar back in the day who said selling is a transference of feeling? Wasn't that one of Zig's? I don't know.
Maybe. But why do people travel? I mean, you can see everything on TV, right? You want to feel. You want to feel what it's like to be there. You know, it's prettier on TV, you know, because the weather's always good.
you can pause it and take a pee.
Yeah. But you people want that feeling, and they call it an experience because feeling sounds too selfish or too base. But that is why people do everything.
So even in the enterprise space, the B2B space, as sales leaders, as sales reps, you think we should be thinking about what is the experience of buying from us people want to have?
Yeah. What is that emotion that drives people? You know, like Mercury, it was that security that the product was well tested and they felt they could sleep at night knowing that everything was tested. With Kantana, it was this automation that everything was, you know, kind of well thought out, methodical approach to everything.
Keeping shit under control.
Yeah. It's that security, that warm blanket, that alarm system of knowing that your life has some meaning and control, as opposed to this mayhem of bugs and things that makes you feel like anything can blow up at any time.
You know, the other one, and this may sound a little pedestrian, but at Mercury, we were really good at what today you'd probably call experience sales and marketing. In the old days, of course, we just called it field marketing. But when you, even something as simple as, you know, you get a couple of boxes at a hockey game or a baseball game or whatever it is, and you take, you know, 30 customers and prospects to that thing, right? Why the fuck do you do that? You do that to create an experience that's fun, that's probably not something most of us would do on our own. I mean, most of us don't have a box to the 49ers or whatever. And when you do that and it's fun and people are having beers and all that, then you can begin to be human beings, and then you get to, okay, so human beings buy from human beings, we build relationships and all that good stuff. And I wonder, you know, AI and all the marketing automation and sales automation, of course, we've grown up with all that stuff, but I wonder, you know, have we lost track of, hey, if you create a great experience event in the field for a handful of targeted prospects, like, have we lost some of that, or are we still doing enough of that stuff?
We're not doing enough of it. And because now people want to do it remotely. They want to do it on the phone, over Zoom, because it's efficient, it's fast, and it is. But what you don't get is that dedicated time where they're not looking at their phone, where they're not worried about their next meeting. And I experience this all the time about the difference between meeting somebody and then just giving them a call. It's just a world of difference. And then meeting them out of their building and a social, whether it's be dinner, breakfast, lunch, whatever, is very different. And why is golf always so successful, right? Because you've got 4 hours of their dedicated time. You know, you're talking about what they care about, what's important to them, and you're getting a sense of who they are as a person and what they find to be fun and interesting. And you connect with them. You know, nobody goes on a date on Zoom, right? People go with...
That's a very good point.
Right? Like, if you can, you meet them for dinner. You meet them for drinks. I mean, what is the progression of dating? It's, you know, coffee, lunch, dinner, right? It's not, you know, let's just, you know, meet online and stuff all the time. It's like you're there not... to connect as human beings.
Are you saying it's hard to fall in love on Snapchat, Brian?
That's a different issue. But I think we are forgetting this because we want to be efficient instead of effective. And certainly in sales and in marketing, we really need to be effective because, you know, there's so much money being spent and so little time to really be effective. You know, because if you look at these companies, you know, some get $100 million in funding, but the ones who are getting little to none, they've got to be really smart about how they spend that, their time and their money.
Yeah. Here's another sort of paradox I've been playing with in my own head around effective and versus efficient. This drive for efficiency, you know, fast, 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 tweets, clickbait, all that, right?
Yeah.
There's something really powerful about slowing the fuck down, right?
Yes.
I think about a trap that I've fallen into in some of the work I've done with entrepreneurs over the last, you know, 10 or 12 years, or, you know, this go, go, go. You got to get public. You got to do this. You got to raise all this money. You got to get to 100 million in bookings. And I was talking to an entrepreneur yesterday that I've been working with for a while, and they're very early stage, Series A. They're doing great. And last quarter, Brian, they realized, hey, the product is shaky and some shit's not really working. And they're selling to Fortune 500s. And the CEO and the CRO said, you know what? We're kind of taking a quarter off from selling. Look, we need to slow some shit down. We need to make sure we get these customers successful. We need to mature this product up a little. And they didn't take the full quarter off. They closed one deal in the quarter, but they only closed one deal in the quarter, and they probably could have closed, you know, maybe even double digits, because in this case, this is an entrepreneur who's a been there, done that guy, and the CRO, who happens in this case to be a gal, but the two of them are been there, done that executives. And they said, in order to go fast, you sort of got to go slow. And they just wanted to get everything right. And so it's on this relationship front, I think it's the same thing. You can't be efficient in how you and I become friends.
You can't. Absolutely. And I because in sales is like the go for the no thing. There was a book about it. And I think it was misinterpreted that a no is better than a maybe, but you're already at no. You know, every salesperson in the world is at no with you and me right now. Right? Are you in market for anything? I'm in market for nothing right now. Okay. But, you know, I may be in market for a place in Florida or Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard at the right time. So if you want to call me up and say, hey, I've got this place right now, you ready to go? The answer is no. So don't go for the no. Take your time to get to yes.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like the guy who wanted to be on your podcast, all he had to do was say, hey, Chris, great podcast. I like how you pulled out this great topic. It really was engaging. Keep it up. Next one. Hey, I posted a 5-star review. You know, I know people hate doing it, but, you know, it was worth it. Boom. Next one. Hey, I was on Burns's podcast and I heard you were on his. Any interest in talking about this, and this? You're on.
Right. And you sort of, he kind of sneaked into your life, right?
Yeah. And all of a sudden you're
like. But in the nicest way.
Right. And do you feel sold?
No, I have a guy in my life who's like that now, who I probably shouldn't name. But he sort of snuck into my life a little bit. And now he and I are buddies and it's great. And he did. Plus or minus what you're talking about, you know, a very slow, what is it? Slowly catch the monkey. Is that the expression? Like just, you know, you drop a little bit of cheese and the mouse comes forward a little bit and then you drop a little more cheese. Yeah. And
right. But if you're at a venue, let's say a trade show or something, and you want to meet somebody, you know, yes, you can go up, introduce yourself, hand the card, give your pitch. And you'll probably not get very far. But if you go up and you start talking about the music, you start talking about the drinks, you start talking about the boring speech right before it or the next one coming up, and you start to build rapport, and all of a sudden you start asking them what they do, and eventually they're going to ask you what you do, and all of a sudden that's how you don't pick up a girl, you know, by saying, hey, you look beautiful. You know, yeah, I really
wanna,
like
get
you.
Naked?
You want to go to a concert?
Yeah.
Nobody wants that. You know, if you see, that's begging, essentially. People go up, can you spare a dollar? And it's like, or can I help you in a retail store?
Yeah. We all have been conditioned. Maybe the worst sales question ever, right?
Yeah. But if you talk about the weather, you talk about, you know, current affair, a TV show from last night, or, you know, some topic that you both have interest in.
Yeah. And it's interesting.
Start a conversation.
The more technology, the more important, simple, basic human interaction, right?
It's gone. And people are trying to get all that condensed into an email, into, you know, a phone call, a pitch. And since everyone's doing it, no longer works.
Yeah.
And I think people are forgetting that.
I love it. All right, Brian, anything else before we kick out of this one?
Nope, I'm good.
You are awesome. It's, you know, and we have done this, what you described, you know, slowly, slowly catch the monkey. I don't know if you're catching me or I'm catching you, but we're catching each other. But I'm having a great time with it.
Cool.
And thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
I sure hope so, Brian. Be legendary, my friend.
We'll see you. Bye now.
Whew. How do you like that? If you know somebody who would love Brian as much as I do, why not email them this episode right now from your smartphone? And we would love you just a little bit extra if you shared this episode on social media right now. Your social media shares are the primary way that we grow this podcast. So we need your help. And if you love Legends and Losers, then hey, man, spread the lub around. Now it's grow time for your business. Let's get growing. Visit netsuite.com/legends, and while you're there, you will be able to schedule a free one-hour growth review with an expert in your industry, somebody who knows something about how to get to the next level. And that's what you want to do. Go to netsuite.com/legends. Also want to tell you about Suite Connect West in beautiful San Francisco, sponsored by NetSuite, October 25th at the Intercontinental Hotel. You will hear fresh ideas on business, technology, and, of course, how to turbocharge your growth. And while you're there, you will hear from the general manager of the NBA champion Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers, and a lot of other industry thought leaders. So go to netsuite.com/company, click on the events tab, and you can get more information on Suite Connect West in San Francisco. All right. Well, I also encourage you to check out our new website, legendsandlosers.com. You can get all of Brian's contact information there. And we're doing more and more Q&A shows, some solo ones I'm doing, some with Joe and Bix Bixen. So if you have questions that you want answered on the podcast, email to blackhole@legendsandlosers.com. And again, check out our brand new website and register for our email list to make sure you never miss any of the fun and hilarity. All right. We would like to thank Brian Burns' company, B2B Revenue. Check out b2brevenue.com. Equity Directory, the invite-only network for entrepreneurs and talent, exchanging work for equity. If you're in the equity ecosystem or the startup ecosystem, then get on equitydirectory.com. The number one bestseller, Niche Down, from Heather Clancy and myself. Check it out on Amazon.com. And the new spin-off podcast of Legends and Losers, 6 Minutes of Legendary, where we take clips from Legends and Losers and set them to music. Check out 6 Minutes of Legendary on Apple Podcasts. OneLifeFullyLived.org, the nonprofit helping you dream, plan, and live your best life. Check us out, OneLifeFullyLived.org. Bixson2, B-I-C-K-S-O-N, the number 2.com. Future hacking, one of the most important concepts for your business and for your life. Check them out and pay attention. Joe and Bix are making regular appearances on Legends and Losers right now. A book I love from a woman I love, Dushka Zapata, Someone Destroyed My Rocket Ship and Other Havoc I Have Witnessed at the Office. Doesn't she know how to title a book, Dushka? She's incredible. Check it out. Someone Destroyed My Rocket Ship. Growwire.com, what legendary entrepreneurs are reading. Check it out. Rapid Media in Australia. Check out rapidmedia.com.au. If you're in marketing and you want to produce legendary results, Rapid Media in Australia. And speaking of legendary results in marketing, 1185 Design, the number one brands in Silicon Valley, are all built by 1185 Design for a reason. The brands that matter at 1185design.com. And the World Wildlife Fund, WWF. We only have one planet, and our wildlife and our planet need a lot of help these days, so check them out, wwf.org. All right, we need to remind you that this information is provided to you solely for informational purposes, and this podcast is the sole property of the Legends and Losers Podcast Network. The information contained in this podcast should not be taken without the express written consent of medical professionals, and we must warn you that the creators, producers, and potential guests, potentially the guests, we can't confirm all of them, but certainly some of them, may have been consuming libations. So don't take any of this too seriously, and frankly, don't take yourself too seriously either. Before making any decisions or taking any actions, you should consult with your clergy, lawyer, doctor, accountant, spouse, and shaman. Don't be lame. Get out of the passing lane. It's not for cruising. Listen to Leonard Cohen. Keep your hands up and your chin down. Support your local salesperson. Buy John's Crazy Socks. And only buy pasture-raised free-range eggs. Thank you, Dandy Candy. I love you, Mom and Dad. And hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go out to Kimberly Kardashian. Sorry, Kimmy. We just ran out of time for you. That's it, my friends. We'll see you again soon on Legends and Losers.